The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect those of Talk Radio AM 640. 3 times. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm the Spaceman. This is A View from Space. I'd like to welcome you in if you're driving around right now listening to AM 640. Or if you're at work listening possibly via the AM 640 app, I welcome you in too. Or if you're listening to me right now on Shaw Direct on Channel 865. I welcome you in also. Or maybe you're listening to me on your 3 or 4G personal communication device. The fastest growing way to pick up the show via the Stream the World software. I welcome you in there. Or maybe you're what some call the traditional best seat in the house, sitting in front of your Mac, your PC at home. Logged on to 640toronto.com. Picking up the live audio streaming there, I welcome you in. Wherever you are in the world, I welcome you in. Well, here we are. Having just come through the Illuminati's ritual blood sacrifice celebration called the Feast of the Beast, showcasing, of course, the vanquishment by fire. Quite a display, wouldn't you say? Now, the elite will focus on their attention or focus their attention on the next sun-worshipping date on their witching calendar they call the Wheel of Life. The summer solstice in the northern hemisphere. The winter solstice, of course, in the southern hemisphere. Coming up on June 20th. We've just been through the vernal equinox, being the spring equinox where the Illuminati celebrates the fact that the woman is now taking over control of the world on her half of the year. The first half of the year is controlled by the woman, as seen in the god and goddess worship in the media. And then men, once again, become dominant in the last half of the year. This is all a simple reflection, you know, of the ancient Greek myth that tells of Persephone, the beautiful daughter of Zeus and Demeter, sometimes considered an Olympian, with the Olympics coming up in just a few short weeks. The myth, of course, tells the story of Persephone gathering flowers in a field one day and is abducted by the mighty ruler of the underworld, Hades, who strikes a deal to let her go, have her freedom for half the year. Then she must return to the underworld and him. Male, female. It's the age-old pair theme. Twins, too. You see, Lucifer is made manifest in this third dimension we all live in called Earth, where there's both male and female in one God. Lucifer, considered to be both sexes. The dichotomy, the old axiom, opposites attract. The Illuminati love too. They control with that number two. Two political parties pitting one against the other. There's right and wrong, left and right, good and bad, up and down, over and under, dead or alive, hot and cold, just and unjust. You get my meaning. But male, female, tonight, the Illuminati love too because It's how you can create great change in the world to hasten their precious goal of having a one-world government. There's the Christ, the Antichrist. It's all about two twins. The King James Version of the Bible is all totally jam-packed with two. One cheating on the other out of his inheritance. Two brothers. That's the actual crux of the whole Bible itself. You can do this changing of the world, this transforming of the world into the world that the elites want by simply creating change, by injecting a little chaos, disruptions. You can do it through pitting one side against the other. The elites know this is the secret to transforming the world into the world of their dreams. Not yours, theirs. You the slave, they the master. Well, there's the two again. Magicians love the twin trick, too. You see, the doubles allow it to look as though things are done magically with supernatural powers. Not all of us have. Only the magician, because he has the knowledge. With doubles, he can make a person seem to, well, disappear. And then immediately make them appear again with the snap of a finger, all done through a special power of magic, he'll have you believe. But not really. It's just merely the double, the doppelganger. The magician's trick was even used in war many times. It's so good, tricking people. Many times, people like Winston Churchill, the president of France back in those days, used a double to hide his whereabouts. Same with Adolf Hitler. While holding top secret meetings with their allies in one place, they would appear to be in another. Hollywood loves the double in acting also. You know why? It saves a fortune in costs producing the movie. To protect your star from being injured in, say, a stunt they'd have to do. You bring in the stuntman for that. The double. So as I've stated, Lucifer is seen as being the double, the dual, dichotomy, male and female. When I return, you'll find out what this drive, this push for feminism has been all about since, well, the start of this whole movement right after World War II. That's coming up on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVFS, and I'm just getting started. I'm the Spaceman. I communicate by email, spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Both addresses are ready for you. The email comes rolling in before the show even begins, and I thank you profusely for the one that you have sent. I really appreciate it. I really do. Yes, two. The Illuminati play two. Wow. To the hilt. Male and female. It's the dichotomy. And you know where the Illuminati get their clever control idea of two, don't you? Well, it's from Lucifer himself, who is considered to be both male and female. A god that will create and destroy. Janus, the keeper of the past and future, with gates and passages, beginnings and endings, change and time, in ancient Roman religion and myth, Janus is the god of beginnings, gates, transitions, time, doorways, passages, and endings. He's always depicted as having two faces. He looks to the future and to the past. Hell, It's even reflected in the British royal family's order of succession to the throne of the British Commonwealth. Oh, yes. They've changed their order of succession to the throne to now include a female member if she's the oldest. That's just happened. Princess Charlotte Elizabeth Diana of Cambridge. Catherine and William's, Prince William's child. Their latest, the girl, has now become the fourth in line to the British throne, bumping her uncle, Prince Harry, one place down in the pecking order. And it's far from impossible that the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge's second child, Charlotte, could actually one day actually wear the crown herself, particularly if her brother, Prince George, the firstborn of the family, fails to have children. If Princess Charlotte does become queen, the new baby will be the first ever, all time, to claim the throne since the law relating to the line of succession was changed in 2013. Under the Succession to the Crown Act, princes no longer take precedence over princesses, their sisters, bringing an end to the system of male preference to be the monarch, which has been in place since the Act of Settlement of 1701. Oh, and there's this. On the same day as the main story that I'm about to talk about concerning women in the military, on the same day, yesterday, Friday the 13th, the only one this year, Pope Francis announced he was willing to set up a study into the possibility of women deacons in the Roman Catholic Church. Yes, Pope Francis says he's prepared to commission a study into whether women can enter the Catholic clergy at the rank of deacon, one position below a priest. He was making the remarks in a closed-door meeting in Rome with senior members of women's religious orders. Deacons, you see, are ordained ministers who can preach or preside over weddings and funerals, but cannot conduct Mass. However, the Vatican media reported that the Pope did not consider the possibility of ordaining women priests, but he did say there is a possibility of deacons. It was a 75-minute conversation. The Pope was asked if he would be willing to create a commission to study whether women could serve as deacons. According to the Vatican media, Pope Francis said he was open to the idea. It would be useful, he said, for the Church to clarify this question. I agree, he said. See, right now, all Catholic priests and deacons are male. Priests must be celibate, but deacons can be married men. Groups that are all for women's ordination in the Roman Catholic Church have long held the argument that there have been many female deacons in history. And this quote coming from the Vatican by the Pope from Rome says that the remarks do not constitute a formal Vatican announcement, but they do signal Pope Francis's willingness to examine a greater official role for women within the Church. So you can see how things are changing with women, big time. Now for the one that really piqued my interest this week. By the way, it takes two, again, two. It takes two, baby, to make me and you. A woman and a man. 23 chromosomes, to be exact, from the woman, and 23 chromosomes from the man. 23. The Illuminati number means something that deeply affects every single person profoundly in the world. How about being born into this world? The number 23 is immediately attached to you. 23 chromosomes from the woman, 23 from the man. There's even a movie made about the number 23. That's how coveted that number is to the Illuminati. And what else happened on the only Friday the 13th this year, 2016? The headline read, Air Force General is first woman at top-tier U.S. Combat Command. None of this made the Illuminati-controlled mass media in a very big way at all. But it was all the Illuminati could do this week to get this done. That was their main goal. Not much else going on except for this huge move. On the Friday the 13th, a 9-day, by the way, May is the 5th month, 13 is a 4, 5 and 4 are 9. Add the year, 2016, it forms the number 18, broken down into numerology, 666, 666, the number of the beast. The day Pope Francis the First is setting up a study to move women higher up just underneath of a priest in the Roman Catholic Church, and the United States Air Force has appointed a general as the first woman at the top tier in the U.S. Combat Command. It happened yesterday, the 9-day, Friday the 13th, at Peterson Air Force Base, Colorado. Air Force General Lori J. Robinson has just become the first woman to lead a top-tier U.S. war fighting command when she took over as leader of the North American Aerospace Defense Command and the U.S. Northern Command in Colorado. General Robinson took over from Admiral Gortney yesterday, May 13th, 2016. And Robinson is just one of two female four-star generals in the Air Force. She was installed during a ceremony attended by the Defense Secretary of the United States, Ash Carter. General Joseph Dunford was there also, who is the 19th chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff. And representing Canada was the Canadian Minister of Defense, Harjit Sujan. Now, the United States Defense Secretary, Ash Carter, praised General Lori Robinson at that ceremony, calling her a strategic thinker who's capable of making split-second life-and-death decisions. Her husband, by the way, is also in the United States Air Force, David Robinson. He's a retired two-star general. These two married generals understand exactly what it's like to be a military family. They were handpicked. You see, there was the tragic death of Lori Robinson's husband's daughter, her stepdaughter, Second Lieutenant Taryn Ashley Robinson, after a pilot training accident. She was simulating a stall and in a training exercise and hit Hydroline. She's the stepdaughter, as I said, of the newly minted commander of NORAD. That happened back in 2006. 4 weeks before her, and there's that number again, her 23rd birthday. So Taryn's stepmother has now become the world's first ever top-tier female general. She's seen by the chief of staff as the personification of a new generation of leaders, that being someone who understands that the Air Force has a broad role, not just in the air, but also in space. She also gets gets it that cybersecurity and drones, and not just flying and fighting in war theaters, are beginning to change the way the Air Force fights and wages its air battles. Lori Robinson's family has deep roots, too, in the Air Force. Of course, as I said, they're handpicked. As you're probably aware after hearing me talk about them just for a few moments, her husband, Karen's father, David Robinson, was a pilot in the Thunderbirds demonstration team. Lori's father, George Howard of Jackson, New Hampshire, was a 30-year Air Force vet and a pilot in the Vietnam War. So as I've just pointed out, if you've missed what the big Illuminati event was this week, and there was one, there's a new commander that's been appointed by NORAD. That's the combined organization of the United States and Canada. That's why the Canadian Defense Minister was there at the ceremony. That provides aerospace warning, protects air sovereignty, also monitors approaches by sea for all of North America. NORAD's best known for its Cold War era control room deep inside Cheyenne Mountain, now used only as a backup. And, oh yeah, NORAD's also really well known for its wildly insane practice of participating in the tracking of Santa Claus every year, helping to brainwash the innocent little children into believing the lie that Santa Claus exists. They even go so far as to actually field calls from children asking for Santa's whereabouts Christmas Eve, and they lie to them and tell them exactly where he is. Anyway, Lori Robinson's other command, besides NORAD, is the Northern Command. That's responsible for defending the United States territory from attack and helping civilian authorities in emergencies. She was given that position at the same time yesterday, Friday the 13th. It was created directly after the September 11th, 2001 attacks, this Northern Command. Her job before that one was commander of the Pacific Air Forces. Her area of responsibility in that job covered more than half the Earth. Controlled by a female four-star general, Lori Robinson. Space Bag with more on the other side of the break on Talk Radio, AM 640.
I'm the guy that calls
Space. It's Drew from Space on Talk Radio, AM 640. Thank you so much for your email. I really appreciate it. I really do. They're still banging up on my inbox right now as two more come in as I speak. I just want to say the springtime is when the woman is in control of the world. Much positive, growing, nurturing, and, well, kind of a feel-good feel to it. When the male takes over in the autumn, things turn a little more, well, you know, rugged. So we have the Walk in Her Shoes campaign that's going on. When does it happen? It happens in the spring all the time. Australia celebrated theirs early, March 8th through the 14th this year, where men put on women's high heels and parade around in their shoes. You get the idea of, not really cross-dressing, but you get the idea of male-female mix here. You understand my meaning here. I believe here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, it's coming up yesterday or the day after, or that would be today, or Sunday. But there is, in every country in the Western world, a Walk in Her Shoes Day. And if you've just tuned the show in, the Pope Francis has ordered a study into making women deacons. The United States Air Force just yesterday has appointed, and she has taken command of NORAD. That's the world's first ever top-tier female general all time. A And it just so happens that the former commander of the Pacific Air Forces, her area of responsibility, before she got the NORAD job yesterday, just the other day, Lori Robinson was named to Time Magazine's list of 100 most influential people. There's a woman running for the top command position of not just a country, but of a world superpower. The President of the United States of America. A female's running. We're very far along on the road down the women's rights path. Why? I'll tell you in a second. Did you know there are already, just to give you an idea of how far down the road we are, there are already 22 female heads of state in the world. Females are in power in Germany, Liberia, Argentina, Bangladesh, Lithuania, Trinidad, Tobago, Brazil. Oh, sorry. She's just been impeached. Don't you find that interesting? Just as the 31st Olympiad is coming up, there's a new leader of the country that is presenting the games. I'll be watching that event very carefully, very closely. Also, Kosovo, Denmark, Jamaica, South Korea have women leaders. Slovenia, Cyprus, North Senegal, Norway, Latvia, Central African Republic, Chile, all have women. 22 countries, well, 21 now, since Rousseff has been impeached in Brazil. That really makes me wonder, whatever is going to happen in Brazil, you can be assured of that now. I'll be there covering it. Now, here's the main reason I opened tonight's show the way I have. It's because I've been saying for more than 15 years now that women would be on the front lines of the coming mother of all battles, the Third World War. That's why they're being given these positions of power, allowed to assume CEO status, allowed to run states. And just yesterday, with the naming of the first ever female general, a top-tier command position, here is the real reason why there's this feminine movement. It's not because women are equal. Never have been. This is a Masonic world we live in. Man is dominant. The woman is allowed to be equal at certain times. Haven't you noticed that? But here's the real reason, as I said, all people will participate in the coming god-awful Third World War that will be the most terrible this world has ever seen. More deaths will happen than has ever occurred. It is just this. After all of those women things, the last 48 hours that I've just mentioned, the Senate Armed Services Committee in the United States Senate just yesterday, again, the Friday the 13th, the only one this year, seconded a call by its counterpart in the House to require women to register for a military draft, setting the stage for a significant cultural change triggered by the Pentagon's decision to lift all gender-based restrictions on frontline combat units. Now you know why they have allowed women to assume, male-dominated because of their strength positions. fighting force, firefighters. Any justification for barring women from draft registration was erased when the Pentagon announced all military jobs would be open to women. They did that last year. The committee, just 48 hours ago, said in a summary of its annual defense policy bill, women must begin to sign up with the Selective Service beginning in January of 2018. That's a little more than 2 years away. The committee added that the top officers in each of the military branches also expressed their support for including women in a potential draft during testimony before Congress. The United States has not had a military draft since 1973 in the Vietnam War. But all men today, even, must register with the Selective Service within 30 days of turning 18. It's the law. Women have never been required ever to register. Have never ever been required to be part of a wide-scale draft. It's what I've been telling you for years. That was going to happen. Well, it is just about to happen. January 2018. All women, United States citizens, will, under law, be commanded to sign up for the draft. Space Bad with more. Other side of the break. Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the guy to call the spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. There's three more now. I tell you, people are beginning to understand now what this feminist movement has been all about. Now, I'm all for empowering another human being, be it male or female. I believe man and woman are created equal. But it's not my world. It's a Masonic world where the phallic symbol, the male, is the dominant one. And they are going to keep it that way. However, they will placate the woman whenever they need to. And in this case, they need all hands on deck, as they say, with this coming war. And there's going to be no mercy. Man and woman alike. It doesn't matter to them. You see, Lucifer is male and female. And this on the backdrop of the Obama declaration of the transgender school law. If you're receiving public money from the government for your school, you must follow his directive of allowing the people in the school to choose what bathroom they want to use on who they believe they are, not what is on their birth certificate as their sex. You see, the world is getting ready for the Antichrist, who will be possessed by this personage, Lucifer, and govern the one world government. Because, and I want to quote the first, very first prime minister of the most occult island in the world, the center of occultism, England. Benjamin Disraeli said the world is governed by very different personages from what is imagined by those not behind the scenes. They are the bloodline of a coveted 13 Illuminati families that trace their lineage back to the tribe of Cain. The purest of that bloodline is known as the 13th Illuminati bloodline, also known as the Merovingian bloodline or the Atlantean bloodline. As I said, considered the purest satanic lineage, all from Cain right up to the coming Antichrist, who may or may not even be here on this planet today. Now, the descendants of this most ancient of bloodlines have given birth to some of the most infamous occult fraternities in the world, like the Celtic Druids, witchcraft, the mystery schools, Tamar, the Knights Templar, the Illuminati. As their own history states, they are all direct descendants of Satan's first son, Cain, the first murderer and the first builder of Earth's ancient cities, making him really, well, the first Freemason, as they are the builders of this world. You simply have to just look at the symbol of masonry. It's made up of the compass and the square, two tools essential for building things. When the God of the King James Version of the Bible banished Cain from the area of Eden's East after killing Abel, his brother, he marked him so that nobody would be fooled by who he was, and that if they followed him, it would be because they knew full well who he was. And also, so that no one should harm him or his offspring for all time, and that they should then be allowed to carry out their great work, which has been so far about a 6,000-year quest, which ends with the reign of their Antichrist, which was first prophesied in Genesis 3, verses 15 and 16. Some of the earliest attempts ever to account for and trace this seed of Satan, who will claim to be from the house of David, the bloodline of Jesus Christ, were books written which did extensive research and genealogy on the descendants of Cain. The Cainites' Luciferian sun cult symbols also include the hexagram, the original seal of King Solomon, a triangle, and what is now known as the Cross of Lorraine, the double cross, a vertical line with two cross members, one underneath the other. The 13th bloodline itself has been traced as far back and east into ancient Egypt, ancient Samaria, and Persia, as well as in Rome. This is important, and it makes a vital connection to many because this sacred symbol, the all-seeing eye above the pyramid, which is supposedly of Egyptian origin, but actually goes back farther than that, and it's actually traced to ancient Sumeria, Britannia, and directly into one mythological island nation whose existence in the ancient Atlantic is entirely believed in the occult. Once again, proving to be the root source of all secret societies, the source of all magic, especially druid magic, which is even being used on you and I today. I talk about it occasionally when it happens. Their true power source is connected in some way to Atlantis, the all-seeing eye, as well as the number 13 itself, the last ascension step of the pyramid, represented on the American dollar bill, as a matter of fact, representing the finality of the great work in its final stage. But the capstone, if you'll notice, on that American bill has not touched down yet and been put in place. It's still hovering above. It's still to come. That is to place the sun-possessed king, the Antichrist, upon the world throne in Jerusalem, completing the capped pyramid. That's depicted on the American dollar. 13 has also unique connections to the number 666. The eye above the 13-stepped pyramid symbolizes the Egyptian solar god Horus, the son of Osiris, lord of the underworld. Horus is the son of Satan. The eye actually represents the Antichrist to the occult world. In reality, you see, the entire symbol itself on the back of the U.S. dollar symbolizes the satanic trinity with the divine couple. Two, Father Osiris, Mother Isis, that dominates the world now. Isis. They are the parents of Horus, the bloodline representative, their progeny, the next leader, the ultimate magical child. And today's Freemasonry believes that they are now, in fact, Satan, possibly Princess Diana, and possibly Prince William, making the eye belonging to the one king who is to rule all the others. One of the most ancient concepts in religion is the divine couple. In Sumeria, it appears as the earliest idea of the Trinity. God, the Father, was symbolized as the Son. His wife symbolized either the moon or the earth. And the king was seen as their offspring. The son of the sun, a living representative of God on earth. The same idea is in the ancient Egyptian religion, begun in Egypt, where the pharaoh, the supreme leader, was viewed as a living incarnation of Horus, son of the divine couple, Isis and Osiris. The bloodline is unbroken. The pharaoh was seen both as a god and as a mediator between the earthly and the divine. It was said that when he died, he ascended to the heavens and became Osiris, basically returning to the source in the minds of the Egyptians. And our elite are running our world today, the Illuminati. It's a spaceman, AVFS. Be right back after this break on AM 640. I communicate by email, spaceman@640toronto.com for an address. The other is space, simply space@640toronto.com. And I sincerely appreciate what you've sent me. Thank you so much. I've been talking about the power of the woman and the power of the woman bestowed upon the world for a reason. To get the girl, the woman, involved in World War III. As I've already stated in this last hour, the Senate Arms Committee has seconded a directive by the House that all women reaching the age of 18 as of January 1st of 2018 must sign up for the draft. No time in history in America have women ever been commissioned to a draft. It's going to begin in 2018. This is the reason for the feminist movement, in reality. And one of the most ancient concepts in religion is the divine couple. In a lot of traditions, the gods and goddesses who make up the divine couple are not seen as being separate or distinct entities, but just differing aspects of one another, or even emanations of one another. This has even been a more ancient tradition. Oh yes, God as the primordial androgen. What is androgen? From the Greek word andro, meaning man, gyn, meaning, of course, woman. Androgen. And the word woman, actually, in fact, in the English spelling, contains the word man. This concept is part of many theologies, even though the idea has been pretty much forgotten or maybe, well, ignored. Traces of it is even in Christianity. For instance, we're told that the name of Jehovah is made up of Hebrew characters representing the four elements: air, fire, earth, and water. But read slightly differently, the same characters spell he, she, and the word Elohim, usually translated as gods or the angels, is actually a composite of Elo, the feminine plural of God, and Im, the masculine plural of God. Even Christian sources concede that this, no doubt, is part of the ancient belief that God was of both sexes. This idea has been the center of certain occult traditions and was given a kind of a revival in the 19th century. In other words, this belief concept was pushed, influencing the Hermetic Brotherhood of Luxor and the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, two of the most powerful and influential black magic cults in our world today. It developed into the belief system, the doctrine that the entirety of creation flows from the differentiation of the unmanifested divine into male and into female. To those who follow this teaching, the reunification of the divine pair represented the means of achieving union with God. Meaning, when you have sex, you become as gods. And there it is. The elites worship the creation. The pagans worship the creation, sex in this instance, and not the creator. In ancient cultures, the divine couple were seen symbolically as being the heavens and the earth. The heavens representing God the Father, and the earth representing the earth mother, Gaia, the living, breathing earth goddess. Together, the two represented the most fundamental notion of generative power. In Mesopotamia, it was said that there was a time at which the heavens and the earth were one. This primordial oneness, called Anki, gave birth to a son, Enlil. This son split the heavens and the earth apart, creating two separate entities from an original whole. Here's the same thing. You split the name Anki into two parts. And here's what happens in the legend. An, A-N, left to rule from the heavens, while Ki, K-I, ascended to earth to rule for with her son Enlil. And so this describes the birth of the divine couple. It's the same story with the god Marduk. He's said to have created the heavens and the earth by killing Tiamat, the goddess representing the primeval waters. He cut her corpse in half, and one part became the heavens, the other the earth. Her eyes became the Tigris and Euphrates rivers that bordered Babylon. Now, this story dates from a later period than the Enki myth, and the symbolism is slightly different, but it still tells you that the idea of heaven and earth originally being one was still believed. And although many other creation myths involving a divine couple seem to hint at this, most are a lot less specific in their detail. For instance, in Hindu mythology, Dias Pitar, God the Father, and Prithvi were the original couple who brought the Vedic pantheon of gods into the world. They were said to have placed heaven and earth into conjunction with one another. But much less the same story. Spaceman, Talk Radio, AM 640. This is AVFS. Back with more on the other side of this break. I'm a guy they call Space. This is A View from Space on Talk Radio, AM 640. Revealing what I believe to be, at least, the real, true reason for the feminist movement. And that is to have women on equal footing so as the woman will be also on the battlefield in this great coming apocalypse called World War III, which will be an ideological war and the last war ever to be fought on planet Earth, with the destruction and the death count beyond the pale. In other myths involving the divine couple, their separation seems to be conveyed symbolically by the act of castration. The most well-known myth, of course, involving the aspect is the Freemason and ancient Egyptian religion of Isis and Osiris. In that story, Osiris is cut into pieces by the dark Set, who scatters 14 pieces far and wide. Isis goes about finding the piece after piece to sew them back together again, and she finds all but one, the penis. And in some versions, the penis has been thrown in the Nile in this myth and eaten by fish. Undaunted, she makes Osiris a penis out of a piece of gold, the color of the sun, attaches it, and instantly the god is resurrected. This tale is different than the earlier myths. It doesn't represent the separation of the divine couple, but the idea of their reunification. The obelisks you see around the world of ancient Egypt are the symbols she made to represent the penis of Osiris, or the needle of Isis, as it's also called. Either interpretation carries essentially the same symbolic meaning. In sewing together the pieces of Osiris, Isis is making him whole once more. The penis she fashions represents the point of union between the divine couple. And so that is where its symbolic significance to the ancient comes from. So the story conveys the idea, the power of the female element to restore the power of God by restoring the union of the two. Other instances of divine castrations are everywhere in the early creation myths. But none are hyped as much as the Illuminati belief of Isis and Osiris. But another example of castration dating from the Middle Ages connected to the Holy Grail. This is the story of Percival and the Fisher King. Basically, the story goes like this. The Fisher King lies dying. He has a wound that never heals. Some versions of the Grail romance are vague as to how he gets this wound, but at least one is very specific. In a bizarre accident, the king has lost his genitals. Yes, a sword he was wielding breaks in two, slicing away his penis. It's said that the area between his legs was as smooth as a woman. The king can only be redeemed by the Grail. And so the knight Percival sets out on a quest in search of it. But before Percival can hope to win the Grail, he must make a weapon to take along on his mystical journey. So, taking the shattered pieces of the king's sword, he melts them down, forges the weapon again, and sets off on his quest. It's all quite intriguing, isn't it? The sword in question is no ordinary one, but a weapon that has legendary powers, like certain men's penises. The power of, say, the penis of someone in great authority is going to be the instrument used to produce the progeny, the continuation of power in that family. So you see how this legendary power gets its, well, its potency. It's said that it ordains victory, this weapon, and ordains absolute power. But only those destined to wield it. Get the double meaning here? Of the weapon as a sword to create victory and achieve absolute power? How about a penis that creates victory and absolute power for the next generation, while all others who are destroyed trying to stop it? If you think about it, the very fact that it shattered in the hands of the Fisher King seems to indicate that he wasn't really the rightful possessor to begin with. And the wound of the Fisher King is also very telling. The loss of his, well, manhood indicates that he existed in a decadent, wounded state. Like having a wound that never heals, as he's portrayed as having. The symbol and symbolism connected to Percival is also every bit as telling. To win the Grail, you see, he must first reforge the mythical sword and make it whole again. This weapon obviously represents some sort of occult magic power, one both creative and destructive. Its breaking in two was the basis of tragedy and ruin. But its reunification? The basis of attaining the Grail. With its shattering, the king was both wounded and doomed. With its restoration, Percival won his quest and married the bearer of the Grail. The symbolism in this story couldn't be more simpler. Just like with Osiris, the king is useless without the ability to come together with the queen and produce an heir to the throne. Another revealing part of the tale is that en route to his quest, Parzival must curse and reject God. He can only attain the Grail by becoming a god himself. This tells you that the very perception of God has become for him a hindrance, a roadblock that he must overcome before winning the Grail is even possible. You know, I think, is that Parzival was meant to be a Templar Knight prototype. He must turn his back on being a servant of the true God, who, in the course of his service to the king, must reject religion. And the Fisher King? Does he represent the satanic takeover of the church, the established authority on earth, possessed of a throne and attempting to wield the supreme power over all men? But hopelessly incapable of doing so? Parzival certainly seems to be everything the king is not. He's possessed of the capability of getting the Grail, marrying the Grail bearer, and not only wielding the legendary sword, but of making it brand new. All of this would seem to indicate that the mystery of the Grail encompasses a lot more than what meets the eye. The very quest itself is part of the process of redemption, of transformation. And since the attainment of the Grail seems to be associated with marrying the bearer of the Grail, well, this symbolic union is more probably the goal of the Grail quest. The objects are just symbology. In other words, the true significance of this tale is in the coming together of the male and female in a reflection of the original sacred idea of the divine couple. The end result of the myth is that when all of this quest is accomplished, the Fisher King's redemption is that he dies, and Parzival succeeds him. In fact, it's safe to say that the elements central to the story of the Grail bloodline could also be explained in the divine couple and the principle that they signified. For instance, the Knights Templar, the poor knights of the Temple of Solomon originally, were totally linked to Solomon's temple with its Kabbalistic pillars of Joachim and Boaz. Occultists believe that these pillars represented the dual qualities of mildness and severity. One of the pillars was gold, the other green. The royal colors of the Merovingians happened to be gold and green, and refer symbolically to the principle embodied by the pillars of Solomon's temple. So the use of gold and green in both cases also signifies the divine couple. Gold in the ancient world was always used to symbolize the sun, God the Father, and green would seem the logical color to symbolize the wife of God in her role as the earth mother. Yes, the robes of God and goddess in ancient cultures seem to have been patterned after the classic parental model. God the Father was severe, distant, aloof. His wife, way more approachable, and in many ways was seen as a mediator between God and man. It is thought that except in rare or extreme cases, few people petitioned God directly in those times. Instead, they appealed to the female deity to intercede on their behalf. Just as any child knows, hey, go to the mom. Mother will naturally be more sensitive to their desires, while the father has a tendency to be less sensitive, more authoritarian. A lot of people think this is the reason why there are few statues around of man as gods. But there's statues of goddesses just about everywhere. This is a sacred well situation, and that's the situation of a sacred well in England, in a place called Glastonbury, which is said to have been visited by Jesus Christ of Nazareth and Joseph of Arimathea, his uncle. It's called Chalice Well, a and it's covered by a large slab of stone, decorated with metalwork showing strange intersecting circles. Sort of like, well, crop circles that you've seen. Even Christian believers say that these circles signify the point of union between the visible realm and the invisible realm. But another object is in the design. The two circles are pierced by what has been said to have been a bleeding lance, a symbol well known from the Grail legend. Some speculate that this lance symbolizes the spear of Longinus that pierced the side of Christ while he was hanging on the cross, it being emblematic of death and resurrection, being the instrument of Christ's destruction. It was therefore a key element of his resurrection. And when seen in conjunction with the two circles, the lance seems to assume a deeper level of meaning. Here it intersects and conjoins the dual worlds representative, that are spirit and matter, heaven and earth. Once again, echoing the same elemental idea already familiar to us. It's the same way that Aleister Crowley chose the drawing of a odd geometric design shape around the chalice and dove that's associated with him. The Vesica symbol. I'm Space, back with more on the other side of the break on Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. By the way, you want to communicate with me one way only? Spaceman at 640Toronto.com. My other email account is space at 640Toronto.com, and thank you for the one that you've sent. I really, really cherish every one that I get. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Now, everything that I've said that you've been hearing has something to do with America. Why? This country, America, built from the beginning with a Merovingian blueprint to create a supernation that would temporarily defend both Britain and Israel, ensuring her place in final events. Absolutely everything that starts with England and America is in its royal lineages. The Bushes, who ran America along with the Clintons for about four decades, the Windsors, the Obamas. Now, why are these sometimes unusually inept people seemingly granted the highest powers in the world? Because regardless of their own intelligences, they have the royal blue blood of the Merovingian kings and the powers placing them above everyone else, and who have an ultimate agenda. One of these men will be completely possessed by Satan once he achieves power. And this same man is going to be known to them as the one. The one the world has been waiting for. You see, the bloodline of 44 of America's presidents, counting Obama, who's related to King Edward I of England, there's 15 presidents alone from that bloodline. From George Washington all the way up to Obama, they all go back to European royal and aristocratic families who have interbred to keep the gene pool as pure as possible. The royals are the only pure of the pure line, descended from Cain. Their genealogy, and that of today's key politicians, the banking tycoons, business leaders, media owners, continues back even further into the distant past through those European royal and noble Aryan families to the ancient kings of Sumer and its empire. Not least of all, Egypt. Throughout history,
the right to rule has been decided by bloodline. For thousands of years, it was done openly. Yet today, it's achieved through covert means, manipulation, and the secret society web called the Illuminati, the children of the Matrix. The Illuminati and its occult symbology, pointing to the hidden knowledge behind its magical origins, can be found in the most powerful nations on Earth, these being the modern Atlantic nations of America and, of course, Great Britain, the Mother Lioness. America, her cub. In ancient times, they were Britannia, Egypt, Sumer, Babylon. With the addition of all the lies being propagated worldwide to Jews and non-Jews alike through the use of Jewish mysticism, as in the Kabbalah, the Zohar, and combined with the equally destructive witchcraft practiced by these people, all believe that the lost tribes of Israel are Britain and America. Now, the serpent worshipping Illuminati have all the people and power in place to bring their Antichrist, the One, to power. That means America must relinquish her place as the empire of the world. So America must fall. We are witnessing that now, you and I. This serpent-worshipping Illuminati have everyone in place. They will all have the correct credentials. And the one coming will have the perfect credentials to be called the world Messiah, even having been from the tribe of David. Which they will have to be to convince Israel that their Savior has arrived in a man. The New World Order that will produce the Antichrist after the cleansing or great purification that they have planned, as I call the Third World War. We'll certainly see Great Britain and Europe at the helm of world events. And as I've been saying for years, the United States will have certainly been removed by that point on the global stage as the greatest empire to make way for this Antichrist and the new empire. Britain, the mother country of modern Satanism. Believe it. The British royal family and its societies have been involved with the occult for centuries. Scottish Rite Freemasonry even refers to Queen Elizabeth II of England in one of their own satanic rites as the Queen of Babylon. Babylon being, of course, that spiritual called place in Revelation, pointing out to where the Antichrist comes from. That's found in Revelation 11, verse 8. In your King James Version of your Bible. For more information on satanic lineages within Britain, there's this detailed examination in the book, The Prince and the Paranormal, The Psychic Bloodline of the Royal Family. It's written by John Dale, put out in 1987, I believe. The same book that was banned outright by Queen Elizabeth herself. His work and others explicitly proves beyond all doubt that the British and the Scottish royal families throughout all the centuries have not only been participants, but playing a major role and actively involved with the ancient societies like the Knights Templar, Scottish Rite Freemasonry, Tamar, Order of the Garter, with a history of going back before the Crusades. A history showing its true origins in the tribes of Cain. I'm Space. More on the other side of the break on Talk Radio, AM 640. It's AVFS. got a comment on tonight's show? Just want to say where you're listening to ABFS on Talk Radio AM 640 from. Feel free to email spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thanks for the one that you sent me. So, the secret societies of Britain and America control and protect Israel and its future fascist coming king, the Antichrist. You see, it was Britain who forced the hand of the United Nations to create the country of Israel and its borders with the cancellation of the Balfour Declaration, and America protects her. They have control well hidden within British intelligence, MI5. Internally, MI6. Outside of the rest of the world. For Britain, the American have the CIA. And even within the Israeli Mossad itself, their secret service organization. It's these four, along with others, of course, who have been systematically used as a major vehicle for the satanic hierarchy working behind the secret veil to control world events through their many assassinations, their many sabotages, and their many wars, and the governance of those countries. Merovingian dynastic history was once only thought by most people who study this subject to be the history of France. But now many people like, well, one of them was the now deceased Sir Lawrence Gardner and other royal genealogists. They revealed its previously hidden connections into Scotland and right now with the children of Princess Diana and Prince Charles. For centuries, Merovingians and its lost king were central to the marriages of all French and English kings. It is still that way today. There's much more going on here than even most historians will ever catch on to. The marriage of Charles, Prince Charles, to Princess Diana was so extremely important because Diana brought one aspect of the Merovingian bloodline back into the English crown bloodline that wasn't there before. The greatest among the princess's forefathers, you see, were the Stuart kings. The English crown, greatest among the prince's forefathers. The Stuart kings. Charles II, James II. In marrying Prince Charles, Princess Diana has given this bloodline to the royal family of England, the Saxe-Coburg-Gotha, to you known as the Windsors, and brought all of the Roman Catholic kings and queens in England's past into that bloodline. And what's more, her son, Prince William, is the first child to claim the blue-blooded lineage from every British king who has ever lived, Protestant and Roman Catholic. The divine child? The Cainites, the race of malevolent beings that have existed on the earth since the dawn of this present age, and their father is literally said to be Satan, the father of Cain. The very one who corrupted and had intercourse with Eve in the Garden of Eden, and that is the truth behind the apple allegory, the apple company. Even one of the Illuminati's companies has the apple as the symbol and is called apple. The apple even shows the bite taken out of it. How blatant can it be? And it has no stem attached. It's the fall of man. The apple, you see, represents, in the Bible, represents knowledge of the occult. the knowledge of black magic, of controlling massive amounts of people. As the Bible states, as well as the angelic war that is still waging, this action then sets up a war between two distinct races of beings on earth, those of satanic origin and those made by the true God, as God made a blessing to counter the curse. Eve is said 9 months later to have given birth to a son, Cain, which means, literally, I have gotten him. It also stated in the original text that she continued in birth and begat Abel, strongly implying that these two were twins. I started the show off with two. The Bible is based on these fraternal twins, meaning having two different fathers, one mother. And it's possible to have twins fertilized by sperm, by the way, from two different partners. It's pretty rare, but possible even today now. Say, for instance, a woman has sex with two different men within two, three, say, four, 5 days. Both eggs are fertilized by each different sperm from each man. The other type of twins are called the identical twins and are always from the same egg and sperm. Again, rare maybe, but remember what's stated in Genesis chapter 3. Here's the quote. And God said, who told thee that thou wast naked? What is this thou hast done? And the woman said, the serpent beguiled me. And the God of the King James Version of the Bible says to the serpent, because you have done this, you are cursed, and I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. In other words, the satanic reptilian seed and the human seed, her seed. She's a human. The serpent was spirit, manifest into the flesh. And thou shalt bruise his heel. Unto the woman he said, I will greatly multiply thy sorrow and thy conception. Thy desire shall be only to thy husband. Genesis 3:11. 3:11, if you're not familiar with Bible scriptures, you'll recognize those numbers. That's the date, of course, of the train bombings in Madrid, Spain. You could call it Europe's 9/11, 3/11. And I know the police codes. 3/11 is the three-digit police code for, are you ready? Indecent exposure. And that's exactly what happened in the Garden of Eden, isn't it? Notice the way the Bible abruptly segues from cursing Satan and his seed, then turning immediately to Eve and curses her with pain in childbirth, as if to make the connection between Satan's seed and Eve's impregnation and childborn their sexual union. When Eve finally brought her firstborn to term, she said with excitement, God has given me a man, son. But it has been theorized by some that she knowingly lied with those words because Adam was present at the birth. Eve knew Cain was not from Adam. The birth of Cain set in motion Satan's bloodline on the earth. The Illuminati believe they are descendants of Cain's bloodline, you see, from Cain. He being the first serpent, reptilian, human hybrid born, being of Satan's own blood and lineage. This cursed bloodline. Now, Microsoft, they used to have billboards with people with reptilian heads on them, if you'll recall. Geico is still running that green reptile ad on screens around the world, and it even has a British accent. Geico is the Warren Buffett-controlled huge insurance company. A green reptile. Very well-spoken British accent, too, appears on the television all the time. And it's always green. Chameleons. Green. Now, back to the Garden of Eden. Eve then gives birth to Abel, meaning favored of God. Adam's lineage. Human male to a human female. Cain was of a spirit in a reptilian body and a human female. And of course, the offspring? Cain, the world's first ever hybrid humanoid. Part reptilian, part man. This is who the Illuminati believe they are. And are going to force their lineage to the top of the heap in a one-world government, and soon. I'm a spaceman. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. More right after this. I'm the guy we call Space Talk Radio, AM 640. This is A View from Space. I communicate by email only, spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thank you for the one you've sent. Now, as I started the show tonight with two, the number two, the dichotomy, looking back at Genesis 3, verse 15, and the war of the two races. Abel was to be the true heir of the God of the King James Version of the Bible's promise, from which a Redeemer, Messiah, was to come through his bloodline and restore everything as it was before the curse of man's fall, his ruin. Listen carefully now. This is what is meant by her seed will crush your seed, as it's written in the Bible. From the very beginning, Abel's lineage, God's, the true God's lineage, was to originally produce the Christ, the meaning of the prophecy made in Genesis 3, verses 15 and 16. Needed to try and derail this plan of God in order to break God's word and final claim of victory in his ancient war. And so took over the mind of his son Cain, the first son of perdition, as Cain is known, and caused him to murder Cain, or Abel. I guess you could say Cain was the first mind control victim ever, as James Holmes, the Colorado shooter at that theater, that Batman movie premiere, is in the news cycle this weekend, with the mother showing the nurturing, remorseful kindness of the male son's actions of depravity and ruthlessness. You see, it's all there. But a mind control victim, James Holmes was. And I don't want to get into it very deep tonight, but I don't believe James Holmes was the actual shooter. And I have covered that extensively in past shows. You see, Satan, believing with Abel dead, that this would break the true God's own word, which would in turn break the power of God, which would then allow Satan's seed to continue and take over the earth and gain total victory. But again, as Genesis makes known, even after the death, Abel's holy blood cried out to the God of the King James Version of the Bible. Once again, Satan had won a battle over the true God in his temptation of early man. First with lust and attacking Eve, then with the murder of Abel at the hands of Cain, and so a definite pattern was formed throughout the rest of the history. Yet even with every destruction of God's original creation, with Abel's death and Cain's victory, the King James Version's God banished him far from where Adam and Eve had settled, removing him as Eve was giving birth to her next son from Adam, whose name was Seth, meaning substitute and gift, because you see, Seth then replaced Abel, the now dead Abel, and carried out the final hope. See, the bloodline of God's original promise. Male human, female human, Seth the replacement for the dead Abel, who belonged to that bloodline. Abel was left to wander the land of Nod, and was given a mark after Cain being cast out, killing Abel. Was able to wander the land of Nod, given a mark called perdition upon him, so that no man could kill Cain, either him or any of his descendants, from doing what they must. Sort of reminiscent of the Bible story of Jesus telling Judas, the son of perdition, go out and do what you have to do. God, knowing the final conflict must take place, and therefore Cain and his descendants will serve their purpose, all relating back to the words in Genesis 3, verse 15. Cain traveled the ancient and cursed world, where he later finds a wife, his dark Eve. The symbol of their cities has always been a towering white obelisk or pyramid. The golden sun disk, too. A silver serpent, also a symbol. The symbols of their clans were symbolized by the pentagram, the hexagram, the rose, the blue apple, or the red equal-sided crosses on a white background, the Maltese cross as it's known. Their first child, Cain and the Dark Eve's first child, named Enoch, meaning the learned one. And it's from this point where Cain's Enochians quickly multiplied further into 13 various tribes, which branched out from their chief city named after Cain's son, located in ancient Persia, what is now known as Iran. I started the show by saying there are two, played heavily upon, two, that number, by the Illuminati. You see, there were two Enochs, yes, one from the bloodline of Adam and Eve, human, making him human, the other from the bloodline of the serpent Lucifer, who is Satan, and mother Eve. Reptilian, human, hybrid cross. Two Enochs. The King James Version of the Bible states, after man's fall, God granted Adam two sons, the elder Cain, the younger Abel. Cain was a tiller of the soil. Abel was a keeper of sheep. Cain, in Hebrew, means possession, just as Eve said at his birth, I have acquired a man from the Lord. Abel, in Hebrew, means breath. Breath in Hebrew can also refer to the things of God's spirit, the Ruach. As the story goes in the Bible, Cain brought an offering to God from the ground, the labor of his own hands, while his brother Abel brought an offering from of the firstborn of his flock as his offering. The King James Version of the Bible states clearly, God in his wisdom pleased with Abel and his offering, but was not pleased with Cain and his. This caused Cain to be angry toward God, and as the King James Version of the Bible states, his countenance fell. God's response to Cain's demeanor was, "Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? If you do not do well, sin lies at the door, and it is, and its desire is for you, but you should overrule it." Written in Genesis 4, verses 6 and 7. Spaceman back right after this break with more on Talk Radio, AM 640. This is AVFS. I'm the guy to call space. It's View from Space. This is Talk Radio, AM 640. Please direct your emails to spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. Now I want to repeat something that I had on the last segment. And it's about God in his wisdom, pleased with Abel and his offering, but was not pleased with Cain and his offering. Why? Because this caused Cain to be angry toward God, and as the King James Version of the Bible stated, his countenance fell. God's response to Cain's demeanor was, "Why are you angry? And why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door. And its desire is for you. But you should overrule it, deny it, say no." Written in Genesis 4, verses 6 and 7. The King James Version of the Bible states that God did not endorse Cain's offering, which was seeds that he planted. In other words, he forced the ground to give seed, and to grow a plant. That plant was of Cain's doing. Abel, whose offering was accepted, just used what God had provided, the animals. So he only used what God had provided, but Cain made something different, of his own making, a seed that forced the ground to grow and have crops, agriculture. Not something that God, of the King James Version of the Bible, meant for. He planted those seeds. The things that he wanted grew, not what Cain did. And that's why Cain's offering was rejected by God of the King James Version of the Bible. But his brother Abel bought something that all he did was look after was the caretaker for an already created offering, which were the animals. Cain did not do well. He was not accepted. Sin lied at his door. Because Cain did not rule over it and say, "I will not do that, I will do as my brother did, use just what I've been given by God, instead of trying to invent something myself." Cain was to overrule sin's desire to rule over him. This, of course, is called your will, your greatest power. Cain was instructed to choose to walk away from sin, away from your own way of doing things, your own invention, and was to walk towards the light, to work with what's already been given you. But Cain chose to follow in his father's footsteps, Lucifer, to invent things on his own. So when Cain went out from the presence of God, literally the face off, he dwelt in the land of Nod, wandering east of Eden. Eden in the Hebrew tongue means a pleasant place or a place of God's pleasure. Turning from God is walking into the darkness, which is void and without form. That darkness is a place of creation where the face and presence of God is not seen nor experienced. Cain was cursed to be a fugitive, cursed to be a vagabond. He chose not to live for the glory of his Creator, but only for his own glory, which he was now destined to make. In his place of wandering, Cain's wife bore him a son, and they named him Enoch. There are two Enochs in the world. In the Bible, Enoch pronounced Kunuk, spelt Kanuk, means dedicated. Then Cain built a city and called the name of the city, or dedicated it, after his son, Enoch. This son and this city were dedicated to the work of the generations of Cain. So, the two books of Enoch, which is what the Kabbalah is derived from, were born. Enoch then had a son named Irad, meaning fugitive, fleet. And Irad had a son named Mehujael, smitten by God, it means. Mehujael had a son named Methushael, who is of God. Methushael had a son named Lamech, meaning powerful. Lamech took for himself two wives, Ada, who bore him sons, Jabal and Jubal. And Jabal lived in tents, raised livestock, while Jubal was the father of all who played the harp and flute. Lamech's wife, Zillah, bore him a son named Tubal-Cain, meaning thou shalt be brought of Cain. Tubal-Cain was also an instructor of craftsmen in bronze and iron. He was a blacksmith. The first, the world's first, Tubal-Cain actually invented it. From the lava, the hot lava in a mountain. All of these generations pointed to the work and glory of the hand of man, because they were under the curse and kingdom of their father, who was Cain. Then Lamech killed two men because they had wounded him. He tried to justify himself by telling his wives it was done in self-defense. He brought further self-justification because of the sevenfold vengeance cursed upon Cain. Lamech now proclaimed in a dramatic, poetic form that anyone attempting to kill him, God's vengeance to them would be 77-fold. This is a deception. Not the voice of the God of the King James Version, but the voice of the deceiver in the kingdom of darkness. Two. One, a doppelganger here. You need to remember that the generations of Cain were under the curse of being vagabonds, wanderers, and fugitives in the earth. They dwelled in the kingdom of darkness, and by their names and professions were dedicated to the work of their own hands, just as their father Cain was. Even in the continuous act of self-justified murder, he was not dedicated to the things of God, to the things of man. He was the beginning of man's dedication to himself, walking in the kingdom of darkness. All those from that lineage were dedicated to the work and glory of fallen man. From Lamech, meaning powerful, came the sin to dominate other men and having two or more wives. He was the beginning of the false power of man to change and make his own way in the earth. Lamech was the first ever polygamist. He was a murderer, like his grandfather, Cain. And rebellion toward God was the inward motivation of that kingdom. Yes, there were two Enochs mentioned in the Bible prior to the Great Flood. One from the bloodline of Cain, whose father was the serpent or Lucifer, who is Satan. And the other, Enoch, was from the bloodline of Adam. So there's an evil type of Enochian wisdom. That's the satanic version of Enochian magic, which I believe is being used by the Illuminati against us today from the Book of Enoch, who is from the Cainite lineage, who are also of this bloodline. They, along with the families who have been helping them in their quest through the centuries, and there is a godly type of Enochian wisdom which comes from the Enoch of the bloodline of Adam. Man. There are evil beings or demons who are the fallen angels that makes all magic work and are the source of power, which comes from this satanic version of Enochian magic. This Enochian learned idea and how to apply the sacred geometry, how to apply astrology, how to apply numerology is being used today in mathematical formulas and spells against you and I. I must repeat here, this source of Enochian magic came from the evil Enoch in the line of Cain, not the good one from Adam. Two Enochs. What's more, Enochian magic is not real Enochian at all, but can be directly attributed to the fallen angels and their Nephilim offspring, who supplied the spirit world with its demons when they died. Just as I believe the books of Enoch originated before the Great Flood, I believe that several copies of an ancient document that teaches evil Enochian magic has survived in hieroglyphic form carved inside ancient Egyptian tombs. These are known as the pyramid texts. In all, there are three books of Enoch. The first Enoch tells of the Watchers, a class of fallen angel who taught humans weapons, spell potions, root cuttings, astrology, astronomy, alchemy. The Watchers also slept with human women and produced the Nephilim. More when I return to the other side of the break with two Enochs on Talk Radio AM 640 on Space.
This is Spaceman and a view from space on Talk Radio AM 640. You got something you'd like to talk to me about at Spaceman at 640Toronto.com or Space at 640Toronto.com. So sorry I haven't been able to get to very many of the many that I have received tonight, but I want you to know I have received them and I read every single one, even if it takes some time on my day off that comes up after this show is over. But I just have so much to say tonight. I'm not getting to as many emails as I would normally get to. Now, there are three books of Enoch. The first one tells of the Watchers, a class of fallen angel who taught humans weapons, special spell potions, root cuttings, astrology, astronomy, and the art of alchemy. The Watchers also slept with the human women and produced the Nephilim. The Illuminati-controlled mass media today will have you believe the Watchers are the aliens of today, who are supposedly watching us from deep space. Now,
the Watchers, as I say, slept with the human women and produced the Nephilim. And for this, they were imprisoned and cast into Tartarus. This is also mentioned in the King James Version of the Bible in the New Testament. In the second book of Enoch, Enoch 2, two angels take Enoch through the seven heavens. This book of Enoch 2 contains the extended version of Enoch 2, the exaltation of Melchizedek. In the third and final book of Enoch, called 3 Enoch, Enoch ascends to heaven and is transformed into the angel Metatron. Now, if you're familiar with the comic book genre, Metatron is the highest ranking angel in the image universe. So this today is brainwashing the youth, and for younger adults who are still into the comic book phenomenon. This is about the Merkaba, and is of high interest to the Kabbalists. In Kabbalic symbology, the Archangel Metatron is considered to be the most supreme of angelic beings, just as I told you it is in the comic world, and is associated with the pinnacle of the Tree of Life, which is the sphere of Kether, known as the Crown. It's seen as the highest of the recording angels in his capacity of maintaining the eternal archives of the Lord. Therefore, Metatron is congruent with the scribe of Akashic, Thoth, Hermes. Mythically, there's the story that Metatron was originally the prophet Enoch himself, who was transformed into the archangel by God. His Latin name is Metator, which means a guide or measurer. In the Socino Zohar glossary, Metatron is described as the chief or head of the world of creation, and also the servant of the body of Shekinah, the divine feminine attribute of God. The fallen angels supply the power behind their magic in death as demonic spirits. Of course, these fallen angels also lend their power to satanic purposes and control the demonic spirits of the Nephilim, who are destined to wander as bodiless spirits until the second death. Cain and Seth, you see, each had a descended named Enoch, the human bloodline and the satanic bloodline, the reptilian bloodline. Each had a descendant named Enoch. What's very interesting here is the fact that each Enoch stands for the very opposite of what the other Enoch represents. The dichotomy. Again, the yin, the yang of life. The good, the evil. What do we know of Enoch, the son of Cain? Only what he meant to his father. To cite Genesis 4, verse 17 of the King James Version of the Bible. And Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Enoch. When it says in the Bible, Cain knew his wife, they meant they had sex. Cain was then building a city, and he called the city after the name of his son, Enoch. Now here's some background. The Nephilim and the Cthulhu, the history inside the Bible in Genesis, tells how the sons of the gods, the Anunnaki, seduced the daughters of humans here on earth and then produced a rare race of people known as the Nephilim. Well, this Nephilim taught man about agriculture. As I told you, Cain invented the agriculture phenomenon of planting a seed and forcing the ground to give its sustenance. Whereas Abel only was the shepherder of of what has already been created by God himself and looked after it, nurtured it. See the difference? The Nephilim taught man about agriculture, cuneiform writing, mathematics, sacred geometry, war, astrology, and occult magic. This is the statement found in the Necronomicon. Nor is it to be thought that man is either the oldest or the last of Earth's masters, or that the common bulk of life and substance walks alone. Here's what the Bible, King James Version, tells them about. And it came to pass that when men had multiplied on the face of the earth, and that daughters were born of them, the son of the divine race found them beautiful and chose wives freely among the daughters of men. The Almighty said, "My spirit will not reside in men for a long time because it too becomes flesh. Their days will be reduced to 120 years. The Nephilim appeared on the earth at this time, and also since the sons of God mingled with the daughters of men, and that of children were born of them, stated in Genesis 6, verse 2, adapted translation from the Hebrew. So as soon as man's spirit resides in a physical body, the days on earth in this third dimension reduced to 120 years. Today, life expectancy is about 85, 90, all depend on what country you're from. And this is one of the most obscure and less talked about passages in the Old Testament. Why is that? Most of what was originally in Genesis chapter 6 was cut out. That mysterious passage I just quoted you, one of the Old Testament's most evocative, tantalizing, shines out of the dust of Genesis. It can probably be taken as an attempt by the Bible's authors to explain and legitimize the countless tales of gods and heroic demigods which far predate the scriptures. In the ancient Near East and around the world, these mighty beings, Genesis would have us believe, have no connection with older rival gods and goddesses. They are descended from the one God, fathered by his angels, on human women. The Bible, remember, has seen a lot of changes in its few centuries. And many translations throw different twists now to the same material. The word given as giants in most modern versions, not always so. In several other versions of the Bible, one that comes to mind in the English is the English New Bible, which it does not state giants at all. It states Nephilim. Spaceman, Talk Radio, AM 640. More next. This is AVFS on Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm Spaceman. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. People say that the Bible is God's word, but it keeps changing. Why is that? The Bible, remember, has seen a lot of changes in just a few centuries. Tons of different translations throw different twists into the same material. Translation, reinterpretation have not been the only cause of change in the Bible. A wide body of material, which was originally accepted as canonical, was cut out by the Council of Nicaea in 633 and 637 AD for different reasons, but mostly for censorship. For example, the council banished the infancy gospels, wherein a cruelly arrogant Christ child kills several innocent townspeople who merely got in his way. A lot of this material survives under the collective name Apocrypha, from the Greek apokryphos, meaning hidden secret, under which name it was commonly included as an appendix in the Bibles up to the year 1600, as a matter of fact. It's in this Apocrypha, most importantly, the two books of Enoch, not to be confused with Liber Logaeff, by the way, written by John Dee, which is sometimes called by that name, and the Book of Jubilees, that you'll find the full legend of the Watchers in the film, which was banished by the Roman Catholic Church Fathers from the Bible in use today. John Dee, who was he? Queen Elizabeth I's chief consultant and alchemist. He devoted most of his time to the study of alchemy, divination, hermetic philosophy. The occultist John Dee crossed, mingled the words of science, magic, just as they were becoming distinguishable. He made them undistinguishable. John Dee was also the James Bond origination. He was the eyes of Queen Elizabeth I's very occult court. John Dee was the spy, had spies everywhere. You could do nothing in Elizabeth I's court without John Dee knowing what you said and who you said it to. The apocryphal books tell you this. Originally, the angels, or sons of God, all surveyed the world and its beings from on high, and among them were those called the Watchers. Today, they're the aliens who are supposedly out there watching. The Watchers can be translated with several shades of meaning, and depending on the translator, meaning observers or sentinels, sleepless ones, whether they are vigilant or simply curious, they watch. Some texts say they were tempted by the beauty of human women. The sons of God saw the daughters of men and thought they were fair. While others grant them a compassionate Promethean urge to guide and teach, or a touching desire for family and companionship, they were told, no female watchers. They were all male. Whatever their motive, 200 of these watchers, led by the great angel, some Jaza Azazel, defied divine direction, descended to earth anyway, and took a personal hand in humankind's creation and education. Hands on, you might say. Crafts and sciences, arts and letters, and many skills of magic, all of which described as secrets made in heaven, intended only for the celestials to know, were shared with our distant ancestors, we're told. And Azazel taught men to make swords, daggers, shields, breastplates, bracelets, ornaments, mining the metals of the earth, showed how to be the blacksmith, to melt the rock, to extract the metal, to mold the metal and then cool it to make a weapon. The art of making up eyes, too. Makeup for women. Beautifying the eyelids. Angels invent eyeshadow? Of course, the ancient pharaohs of ancient Egypt were heavily into the makeup, making them look as gods to the rest who could not afford or did not know the art. Today, a girl will not leave the house without her makeup on. And Azazel taught men to make swords, daggers, shields, breastplates, weapons of war. Amezerak taught all those who cast spells and cut roots, farmers, agriculture. Armasus, of the release of charms, taught men to cast spells, taught them magical skills. Barakiel taught astrology. Azrael taught the path of the moon. Peninnah the one that showed the sons of men the bitter and the sweet. He taught men the art of writing with ink and paper. Through this, many have gone astray. Even reproductive choice was granted. Castellet. This is the one that showed the sons of men the blows which attack the embryo in the womb so that it miscarries. Oh, the Book of Enoch. The three books of Enoch. This is the knowledge contained therein and more that we know nothing about, but the elites do. The lore they taught, though, takes a lesser role in the result of their sexual union with womankind. This was, of course, the birth of the Nephilim, known as the giants in the earth of Genesis, a monstrous race of giants with spiritual powers and earthly appetites. You know the story of Hercules. He was a giant. The Nephilim. Some were actual heroes of the Bible, like the biblical mighty hunter before the Lord, Nimrod. Others were less noble from the first book of Enoch, and they, the watchers, took wives to themselves, and they taught them charms and spells, and their wives became pregnant and bore large giants. These devoured all the toil of men, until men were unable to sustain them, and the giants turned against them in order to devour the man. And they began to sin against birds and against animals, and they devoured one another's flesh and drank blood from it. Then the earth complained against the lawless ones. Yes, the demonic spirits teaching man the Enochian magical powers. The Aramaic Greek translation complicates matters even further, you know. And they bore them three kinds. First, large giants. And to the giants were born the Nephilim. And the Nephilim begat the Eliud. And they grew according to their greatness, and they taught themselves and their wives charms and spells. To charm someone, by the way, is to catch them off guard with some sleight of hand and trick them. That's charming someone. You can meet someone for 10 minutes. Talk to them for less than five. And when they walk away, you say, well, that person was very charming. Because what they did was they really tricked you into liking them immediately without even getting to know them. They just said the right thing at the right time, pressed the right button. Charm. Jubilees agrees that they weren't all unlike, so we can imagine three successive generations of angel progeny coexisting on the earth, all skilled in magical arts, and all apparently peaceable. Well, at least for a time. This goes along with the traditions, quoted by Davidson and Hudson, that the Nephilim, not the Watchers, can be credited with works as diverse as forging, blacksmithing, making weaponry out of metal. In Beowulf of King Hrothgar's magic sword and the building of the Tower of Babel, if the Nephilim existed long enough to master some creative arts, they also had time to reproduce. More on the Book of Jubilees, the Enochian magic, when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. I'm Space. It's AVFS. This is the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640. The show's called View from Space. If you have something to say, where in the world you're listening to the show from, or you got a show idea, or you got a question, or you got a comment,
Spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. The Aramaic Greek translation complicates matters when it comes to the Bible and what was originally in it. And they bore to them three kinds. First, large giants, and to the giants were born the Nephilim. And the Nephilim begat the Eliud, and they grew according to their greatness, and they taught themselves and their wives charms and spells. Jubilees, the book of Jubilees agrees, adding that they were all alike, so we can imagine three successive generations of angel progeny coexisting here on the earth with us humans, all skilled in magical arts and all apparently, well, nice, at least for a time. And this will go along with the traditions by Davidson Hudson, as I was seeing before the break, that the Nephilim, not the Watchers, can actually be credited with works as diverse as the forging, as making metal objects, blacksmithing, melting rock, extracting the metals, cooling it and making weapons, and creating havoc, and creating a power base that no one could stand against in those times. In Beowulf, of King Hrothgar's magical sword and the building of the Tower of Babel, if the Nephilim existed long enough to master some creative arts, they also had some time to reproduce. But it wasn't to last. The Book of Jubilees goes on to say, and they devoured each other. Yes, the giant killed the Nephil, and the Nephil killed the Elijo, and the Elijo humankind, and one man killed another man. The loyal archangels, Michael, Gabriel, Sariel, and Uriel, who had not followed Azazel, and were still faithfully observing earthly affairs, saw all this and protested to God Almighty. The King James Version of the Bible says, it's very intriguing to hear the tone of their complaint. In the first book of Enoch, it says, see then what Azazel has done. They say, how he has taught all iniquity on the earth and revealed the eternal secrets which were made in heaven and has made known spells and has brought knowledge to men. The sons of men practice his practices in order to know the secrets. This is not simple righteous wrath towards violence and sorcery. These things were private property, and the archangels were angry at their revelation to mankind. The first book of Enoch states, quoting the even more ancient book of Noah, is explicit. They, the humans, have learnt all the secrets of the angels, the Anunnaki, and all their secret power and all the power of those who practice magical arts and the power of enchantments and those who cast molten images for all of the earth. Blacksmith. Could this be the greatest reason for the suppression of the Apocrypha? The chance that no condemnation of divination, astrology, spells, alchemy, and the black magic arts as devil-inspired would stand if these chapters, plainly claiming them as heavenly lore, were kept and placed in the Old Testament of the Bible, say? The whole history of the Middle Ages might have been different. Maybe. More likely, of course, it would have been asserted that the gift of heaven's wisdom was corrupted and diabolized by the giver's rebellion. But it was the unauthorized act of revelation that outraged the archangels, and it was the act which God punished. I shall restore the earth so that not all the sons of men shall be destroyed through the mystery which the watchers made known.
divinely commanded, the obedient watchers swept down and defeated their brothers, whose punishment was to watch the death of their children before being themselves imprisoned in the mountains and deserts of the earth until Judgment Day, when they will be cast into the lake of eternal fire, the Bible states. By the way, did you know that Azazel, this demonic watcher, was the only watcher whose burial place is actually believed to be known here on earth? Under a heap of stones. Azazel, by the way, was the one who made weaponry, blacksmithy, amulets, pounding metal into little god idols. Azazel. Under a heap of stones at the foot of the cliff of Haradin, in what is now Sinai, where Azazel is seen as a demon, he receives every year the scapegoat driven into the desert with its burden of Israel's sins. Alternately, he is sometimes said to have hurled himself into the sky and became the constellation Orion. The constellation of Orion, by the way, is where I believe alien contact of the third kind will emanate from. When contact is made with extraterrestrials, so-called, it's called the third kind, the royal number, of course. Contact with aliens. Yes, this indicates that rebellious angels actually had sexual intercourse with human women who gave birth to sons described as the mighty men who were of old the men of renown, as recorded in the King James Version of the Bible. More on this when I return. It's Talk Radio AM 640. I'm the Spaceman. This is AVFS. It's Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640. And a view from space. Emails to spaceman@640toronto.com. Space, 640toronto.com. Now, as I was saying before the break, the indication that rebellious angels actually had sexual intercourse with human women who gave birth to the Illuminati of today, the mighty men who were of old the men of renown. Part human, part reptilian. This understanding of the Nephilim is also affirmed in the New Testament, the King James Version of the Bible, in Jude, verses 6 and 7, by the way. This is not the Bible story that was taught to children in Christian church Bible classes even just a few years ago. It seems the Bible is, well, like everything else, still evolving. How does it get that way? Because of guys like Aronofsky of Hollywood. In Aronofsky's movie Noah, if you'll recall the movie, there's nothing in the flick even remotely close to what the biblical story actually depicts. Oh, sure, the flick does show a flood and Russell Crowe's character is still named Noah, but after that, there's little more. But not much that is even remotely close to the traditional story. Some have defended Aronofsky's added material by reminding us that he also used ancient texts, such as what I've been talking about tonight, and the contents therein of the Book of Enoch he used. He also used the Book of Jubilees, which I've been bringing up, which talk about the Watchers. Even here, Aronofsky gets it wrong. On purpose. Remember, in brainwashing techniques, if a person becomes confused, they're much easier to be reprogrammed, controlled. It's the very same old psychological trick the Illuminati does with us over and over to change people's views. Confuse people. When you get so confused, you don't know what is right, what's wrong anymore, you're more susceptible to changing your old belief for the new one. According to the books of Enoch and Jubilees, the Watchers were put portrayed as rebellious angels who took human form and had sex with human females. Their children were half angel, half human beings, called giants or the Nephilim. The Illuminati believe they are that bloodline. In the Noah film, the confusing sequence actually portray the Nephilim as watchers as the same entities. They're also shaped like stone in the movie, but according to Jubilees and Enoch books, the Nephilim were wicked beings in human form who got wiped out in the flood. Their disembodied spirits became demons. Since the real Noah is talked about in both the Bible and the Quran, the three major monotheistic faiths, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, respect the person of Noah and accept his biblical survival of the flood as factual history. It's for this very reason this movie was made for just this specific period of time in human history when the Illuminati are pitting Islam against the Jews and Christians. The plan is to, you see, wipe out, make illegal these three religions, which will be given as the reason for the cause of all the violence and bloodshed in all of mankind's history. Now, the King James Version of the Bible, Genesis 6, Numbers 13, which records the pre-flood and post-flood eras, is where this word Nephilim is mentioned, which has become the center of discussion for a lot of years. Even more lately, since the controversial movie Noah was released, the very reason for its release at this particular time, by the way, this Nephilim debate isn't new. The identity of the Nephilim and these so-called sons of God has been debated in Christian circles for a long time now. To add to the confusion, there's also the popular unbiblical belief floating around out there. It's the belief of the Illuminati, of course. And the belief is that the Nephilim are, in fact, space aliens. This is a view, of course, totally rejected by the creationists, the ones that believe man was created by the God of the Bible. Others believe that fallen angels bred with women, which resulted in the birth of giants, now called the Nephilim. Others believe the sons of God were the result of fallen angels who overtook ungodly men to breed with women. Still others believe the Nephilim were the Sethites. Sethites were the descendants of Adam and Eve's son Seth, who became the replacement after Cain killed Abel, because there was no longer anyone representing the human-human aspect. Cain was hybrid human, Satan and Eve. Abel was Adam and Eve, human-human. So Abel had to be replaced after he was killed, and of course Adam and Eve begat Seth, the replacement. There are some other views of just who this Nephilim is as well. Are you ready? Here comes the Illuminati lie. These Nephilim are the kings, the rulers, the heads of leading family groups, and are seen as being godly, taken from Psalm 82 in the King James Version of the Bible. This view has some similarities to the Sethite view, but eliminates most of Seth's descendants and instead states the only ones that are godly are the leaders, the kings, the royal houses, as well as some other leaders of other tribes as well, although their bloodline is less pure than the royals. Another variation of the Sethite view is that these godly men had relations with ungodly women, and the offspring worshipped other gods as opposed to God and fell away from the true God. This is known as the fallen men view. So as you're aware, there's a lot of confusion over the word Nephilim. No one today really knows what it means. It's related to the verb nafal, meaning to fall in Hebrew, which is why some equate them with fallen angels, or to be more precise, the offspring of fallen angels. This view This idea then also strongly supports the notion that man had fallen away from God himself. It was basically just these two concepts that helped to confuse many on this very strategically important piece of knowledge of the foundation of the earth and the creation of man himself. As I've already said, there are effectively only two views that surround the controversial identity of these Nephilim, which follow on from alternative views about the identity of the sons of God. They are that the Nephilim are the offspring of Seth, stated in the Qumran, the Dead Sea Scrolls. One of the fragments contains the earliest known reference to the phrase children of Seth, stating that God had condemned them for their rebellion. There are earlier references to the offspring of Seth rebelling from God and mingling with the daughters of Cain also. For instance, they're mentioned in Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's writings. Yochai was a famous first century Tanaitic sage in ancient Israel, said to be active after the destruction of the Second Temple in 70 AD. Orthodox Jews actually believe that he was the author of the Zohar, the main work of the Kabbalah. Also, Augustine of Hippo wrote of it. He was an early Christian theologian, philosopher whose writings were very influential, of course, in the development of Western Christianity and Western philosophy. Julius Africanus, a celebrated orator in the reign of Nero, mentioned this also. He was not from Africa, by the way, as his name might suggest, but he was the son of the Gallic chief and a member of the ancient Celtic tribe. It was again mentioned in the letters attributed to St. Clement. Those letters date from the late 1st or early 2nd century. This view, is also the view expressed by the modern canonical Aramharic Ethiopian Orthodox Bible, that the Nephilim are in fact offspring of angels. A few early sources refer to the sons of heaven as angels. The earliest of those references all come from the Dead Sea Scrolls, the Greek and Aramaic Enochic literature, and in certain Giz manuscripts of the first book of Enoch and in the book of Jubilees used by Western scholars in modern editions of the Old Testament. Now, even some Christian apologists like Tertullian and especially Lactantius said the same thing. The earliest statement in a secondary commentary explicitly interpreting this to mean that angelic beings mated with humans is traced to the rabbinical Targum Pseudo-Jonathan, and since then it's become pretty common in modern day Christianity. Now in the book of Enoch, the story of the Nephilim is even more fully revealed. The Greek Amoraic and main Giz manuscripts of First Enoch Book and Jubilees obtained in the 19th century and held, of course, in the British Museum and the Vatican Library connect the origin of the Nephilim with the fallen angels, and more precisely, with the origin of that Nephilim with those fallen angels. A gargoyle, also known as the Watchers. And it was Samyaza, who was supposedly an angel of high rank and was described as leading a rebel sect of angels in a descent to earth to have sexual intercourse with human females. Here's the quote. "And it came to pass, when the children of man had multiplied, that in those days were born unto them beautiful and comely daughters. And the angels, the children of heaven, saw and lusted after them, and said to one another, Come,
let us choose us wives from among the children of men, and beget us children. And Samyaza said, who was their leader, I fear you will not indeed agree to do this deed, and I alone shall have to pay the penalty of a great sin. And they all answered him and said, let us all swear an oath then, and all bind ourselves by mutual imprecations, not to abandon this plan, but to do this thing. Then they all swore together and bound themselves in a mutual pact, a bond. And they were all, in all, 200 of them, who descended in the days of Jared on the summit of Mount Hermon. And they called it Mount Hermon because they had sworn and bound themselves by mutual imprecations upon it. In this story, the children of the Nephilim are called the Eluad, who are considered to separate race from the Nephilim, but they share the fate, the same fate as the Nephilim. So they are, in fact, indeed, the same. The Eluad, the Nephilim, one and the same. According to these texts, the fallen angels who begat the Nephilim were cast into the Tartarus. The Greek Enoch, Book of Enoch, says to place a, it's a place of total darkness, but Jubilees also states that God grants 10% of their disembodied spirits to the, of the Nephilim to remain after the flood as demons to try to lead the human race astray until final judgment comes. Space, back with more. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. I'm the guy they call the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio, AM 640. It's View from Space. You can email me at spaceman@640toronto.com or space@640toronto.com. We're just talking about, well, Mount Hermon, where the evil ones, the Anunnaki in heaven, the demonic spirits, the fallen angels, make a pact with a few of them, a few hundred, and want to go down to Earth and mate with the human women, as they found them very beautiful. And the children that came from this are called the Nephilim. And according to these texts, the fallen angels who begat the Nephilim were then cast into a place called Tartarus. And that is supposed to be a place of total darkness. But Jubilees, the Book of Jubilees, also states that God grants 10% of the disembodied spirits of the Nephilim to remain after the flood as demons to try and lead the human race astray until the final judgment comes. Tartarus, or Tartaros, as it's known in the ancient Greek mythology, is the deep abyss that is used as a dungeon of torment and suffering for the wicked and the prison for the titans. Hell. It's actually a place that is said to be far below Hades as the earth is below the heavens. Tartarus is the place where, according to Plato and Gorgias, written in 400 BC, souls were judged after death and where the wicked received punishment. Like other primal entities, like the earth and time itself. By the way, Tartarus was also considered to be a primordial force or deity, a god. I believe it's just another one of the thousands of names for Lucifer, Satan, Samael's one, Zeus another. There's just so many. So in Greek mythology, Tartarus is both a deity and a place in the underworld. Now, in the mystery schools and in ancient Orphic sources, Orpheus was this legendary musician, poet, and prophet in ancient Greek religion and myth with an ability to charm, magical expression there, to charm all living things and even stones with his music. Tartarus
was also supposedly the unbounded first existing entity from which the light and the cosmos are born. You see, there's the Illuminati's view. Lucifer, the bringer of light as he's described, being the unbounded first existing entity from the light and the cosmos are born. The creator of it all. Heaven and earth, including man. Lucifer. In the Greek poet Hesiod's Theogony, written in 700 BC, Tartarus was the third of the primordial deities, following after Chaos and Gaia, the earth goddess, and coming before Eros. So, according to Greek mythology, the realm of Hades is the place where the dead, Tartarus, has many inhabitants. When Cronus came to power as the king of the Titans, he imprisoned the one-eyed Cyclops and the hundred-armed Hecatoncheirs in Tartarus and set the monster Camp as its guard. Zeus then kills Camp and releases the imprisoned giants to help him in his conflict with the Titans. The gods of Olympus eventually win the battle, of course. Cronus and Epimetheus and Metis and most of the female Titans are spared. Now, according to Pindar, the ancient Greek lyric poet, says Cronus somehow later earned Zeus's forgiveness and was released from Tartarus to become the ruler of Elysium. I talk about this every year, the child sacrifice time of the 13 days before Beltane, which you know is May Day, May 1st. We just went through the Feast of the Beast. I talked about the Eleusinian Mysteries, as they're known, which is a cult who perform religious secret rituals, ceremonies, and their beliefs have always been kept ultra-secret. And never ever even written down, but consistently preserved and passed down verbally, only amongst the highest ranking Illuminati families, all the way back from antiquity. The initiated believe that they will have a wonderful reward in the afterlife if the rituals are consistently performed exactly as from the beginning, and to make sure that they are. This is what I report on and follow through the wheel of life, the year's cycle in the witching calendar with the Illuminati. Another Titan, Atlas, was sentenced to hold the sky on his shoulders to prevent it from resuming its primordial embrace of the earth. Other gods could be sentenced to Tartarus as well. Apollo is a prime example, although Zeus freed him. The Hecatoncheirs became guards of Tartarus's prisoners. Later, when Zeus overcame the monster Typhon, the offspring of Tartarus and Gaia, he threw him into what's written as Wide Tartarus. Originally, Tartarus was used only to confine dangers to the gods of Olympus. In later mythologies, Tartarus becomes the place where the punishment fits the crime. As well as in Enoch, the Book of Jubilees, it also states that ridding the earth of these Nephilim was one of God's purposes for flooding the earth in Noah's time. And these works describe the Nephilim as being evil giants. Targum Pseudo-Jonathan, which is a Western translation of the Torah, identifies the Nephilim as Shemahaza, and the angels in the name list from the first book of Enoch. In the New American Bible, it actually draws a parallel to the Epistle of Jude and the statements found in Genesis, suggesting that the epistle refers implicitly to the father of the Nephilim as heavenly beings who came to earth and had sexual intercourse with women, humans.
The footnotes of the Jerusalem Bible suggest that the biblical author intended the Nephilim to be an anecdote of a superhuman race. Some Christian scholars believe that to be an outright lie, saying that Jesus stated one time that angels do not marry. Still, other Christian researchers believe that Jesus was only referring to angels in heaven, not the ones here on earth. Space back with more on the other side of this break on Talk Radio AM 640. Hey, VFS, some space. This is the final segment of tonight's show. Yes, the satanic forces here on earth, empowered now by the new technology in computing, are now telling the rest of us that the secrets of life are now being revealed through human science by way of DNA manipulation and other things. They say they will be able to achieve their long-coveted goal, of which their purpose is to put in place a new global empire in place of this old system now that is broken. They are showing you that it is broken, and they will soon insist it no longer works, and the new global empire to replace it will be ruled by the purest bloodline member of the tribe of Cain as their supreme leader, who will later on, when in power, will insist on being worshipped as the god of this new world they've built. Yes, they're trying to convince us now that the secrets of life now being revealed through human science is actually the Book of Enoch put into practice weekly, daily. You see, the Illuminati believe they are the Nephilim, those hybrids that are part reptilian of Satan and part human of Eve. And the earliest of the family tribes of Cain multiplied, conquered many of the ancient nations in the Asiatic Near East. Then they migrated. They kept on moving. Over the following centuries, certain branches of their nomads had already spread throughout the Mideast, all the way from Persia to southern Egypt, and even reaching as far as the Caucasus and the Carpathian Mountains, and further west to the land of Canaan, assimilating themselves among the first of its inhabitants, were known as the Cainites. While this was all still happening, the Lord had directed his tribes who had descended from Seth, Abraham, Moses, Joshua among them, leading them and their generations also into the land of the Canaanites, where they were to completely possess the land which God of the King James Version of the Bible had given them for an eternal possession. This is, of course, the reason for war. And so sent his Seth against Satan's Cain, as if in some cosmic chess match of which God of the King James Version of the Bible later had nearly every Cainite killed and removed from this extremely ancient and already contested land. These victorious Hebrew tribes and their strong armies later became Israel, and the Jews were told, God's chosen, through which the Messiah would later come through. That's what the King James Version of the Bible contends. Cain's descendants, losing their epic battles to the overpowering descendants of Seth, were forced north into the Caucasus, into the Carpathians, where they settled among their ancient brethren called the Keltoi, later migrating en masse further west, eventually coming into Western Europe, killing off any and all native peoples along the way, stealing land, building cities over the ashes everywhere they went. A small remnant never left Canaan, which is today Israel, but stayed there hidden as if waiting for an event, maybe even revenge. The Western
migrating tribes and filtered into Europe, setting out to conquer the nations with their newly formed iron weapons against bronze, constantly moving west, as if being led by some ancient force toward the Atlantic, leaving behind them their unmistakable and barbaric trail of blood and murder. Does Conan the Barbarian come to mind at all? Oh, and who played that role? It was none other than the lineage of Cain, Arnold Schwarzenegger. At the time of Christ, some scholars have them as literally descending from their homes in Canaan with their secret lineage to become the Jewish priests known as the Pharisees, who were in control in directing the region of the Jews at that time. This is still being debated and unclear, but one thing is certain. Christ always set himself in complete opposition to the Pharisees. Despite the power over life and death and secret connection they held with Rome, in addition to this, Christ never addressed them as Pharisees or teachers, as a person would have called an elder at that time in all respect. He instead labeled them as a generation of vipers, snakes, adders, brood of evil serpents, even in one instance calling them the children of Satan, stating their father is of the devil, and he was a murderer from the beginning, and that they know only to do his will. Jesus spoke the truth, knowing the connection between Cain and Satan. 40 years after the crucifixion was Rome's complete destruction of Israel in 70 AD. Seth's lineage, blamed for what the lineage of Cain did, which was their killing of God's only one and true Messiah, as they say. And what happened? They were wrongly destroyed and scattered among the nations for the next 1,850 plus years. The same angry curse which Jews were always threatened with in times past for worshiping other gods. This was known as the great peril to the Jewish people in history. So far, needless to say, Europe was not kind to the scattered Jews during those 1,850 years. Cainites were now in every position of power in the ancient world, even then, and after centuries of interbreeding while in Eastern Europe, their occult bloodlines, carefully placed in positions of power as they are today, greatly increased their territory, their strength, their status and intrigue over the former rulers whom they killed, eventually leading them to ascend Europe's ancient thrones. In early European lore, these same ones took on near mythic attributes and were seen as having less godlike than monstrous qualities, and were even later said to be the brood from which arose the vampires of legend. In still more ancient texts, it is Cain himself who is known as the first vampire. A tradition that was certainly handed down through the most powerful of elitist societies, yet the same tradition is most often found in satanic books. They were notorious in the ancient world for their extreme strength, their murderous cruelty. They were perceived by fearful Europeans and its former Slavic houses of nobility as gods of their own right, divine with an innate and dark nature, ever thirsty for blood, not being fully human. That is to say, they are not of God's design, and they took on the ways of reptilian serpents, which is cold-blooded, no emotion. And you know, of course, reptiles will even eat their own offspring, kill their own offspring, as have the houses of nobility done through the ages, fighting for the power. Wherever world power was rising, Satan had his children placed there, always ready to take the highest positions of power and influence over the people. The That's still true today. They were to be secretly ruled by the societies with the purest blood. Here's a clue in the book of Revelation at the time of Rome, Revelation 17, verses 17 and 18. When Pergamos then became Satan's seat of power, Revelation 2, 12 and 13. During this time, their own arcane secret societies equally grew in status, number, and would have their grip over world authority, later taking in among them even those who were not of Cain's blood. Anybody accepted as evil could enter their ranks now, yet they were sworn to keep their secret, always pushed on by the quest for this holy grail and the lies behind it. Not long after this are the first accounts seen of a world conspiracy brewing to those forced to watch, like today's incarnation referred to as reptilians, surfacing then with a furry first, horrific tales of bloodthirsty monsters ruling the world. Make no mistake, it is the family of Cain, and one is coming who will demand to be called God. The Antichrist is now, even today, taken great steps forward to putting this plan into reality. This has been A View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. Coast to Coast is next. I'm Space, and